welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Well, honey, I love you too much. I need your love too much. I want the thrill of your touch. Well, gee, I can't love you too much. You do all the living while I do all the giving, cause I love you too much to do. But Dad, you spend all my money. Yes.
Masking Shazam.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. This is Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave, back with another episode of Three Wise DMs. That, obviously, anytime I can shoehorn in the king of rock and roll himself, Elvis Presley, Elvis Aaron Presley, I'm going to do it. And that was his, I mean, one of his multiple number one hits, Too Much, 1958. Excellent tune. Like, really rips, though. Like, for 1958, like, it's heavy, dude. It's like, bow, bow, down, bow, down, bow, down, and like this kicking snare drum and like, yeah,
some people jumping in the mosh pit there back.
Yeah, go listen. It's like so it's like those memes that go around now, like what the Beatles sounded like to your parents, and it's like deicide or something. You know? So anyway, we get very used to whatever we're exposed to. So, but why too much? Well, too much because we have a listener question. It is the return of our co-DM, Dr. DM himself, Jason. He comes with a question, really good one. So we're going to dive into this, but here we go. So it's greetings, erudite triumvirate of the masters of the dungeon. I don't even think he has to write a tithe next time, because like that's several of them, right?
Like I think that counts as like an inspiration should we ever encounter him in a campaign.
It's like when Springsteen tells the story when he was writing Blinded by the Light and he just had a rhyming dictionary and he said by like the end of the song it was just on fire. Because it's just like so he writes, I have been percolating a question for you all, and something Dave said in the last episode brought it together. He mentioned again how he had put all of the ideas and things he wanted to experience as a player into the Dragonlance campaign, and that it made it successful, which it absolutely did. I've been running into something of a challenge in this area. With some of the breaks we've had, I've continued talking with the players to keep excitement going. I've also been reading other materials to have resources available to me. But in doing so, I've come up with an abundance of material to pull from and many ideas I think would be fun to put in the game. However, I feel I could bog things down if I try to put in absolutely every idea I have. I know I can save some of the ideas for future campaigns, but that just adds to the growing list of good ideas from other campaigns. So the question is, if faced with an abundance of ideas, how would each of you decide which things to insert and which to hold on to for later? Do you have any metrics for what might be too many ideas? I'd love to hear your ideas on how to solve this dilemma. And then, you know, thanks again and all that. So, again, we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. And send us your problems, just like Dr. DM Jason sent us, and we can talk about them. So let's talk about this one. What is too much?
Well, I think it'd be difficult to actually come up with some type of metric, because two of the variables would be, one, what kind of table you have, and that's really impossible to quantify. And then two, what is your frequency of play? Now, he just mentioned he's having a break there, which can be your friend to recharge the creativity or make people forget what's going on. So with Ragnarok, I had all these cool ideas from the lore and the source material, and then towards the end, as I realized it was wrapping up, I kind of had this moment where I'm like, I got to really invest some time so it all gels and I can wrap this up at the end. And you're not having a real Game of Thrones moment where it's like, I have 17 plot lines to resolve in 2.5 hours.
Tony, that we said it before, it's like that was the human version of your Storm King's Thunder campaign, where like there's just so much to do and so many places to go that you're like, okay, let me just I gotta get a throughway here.
Yeah, no, I think you can get some paralysis by analysis. I think, like, to Tony's point, I don't think there's a solid metric, but I think ideas are good. You, like, I think even when you say you brought, like, all of your ideas to there, you brought ones that you had worked with and then you had thought about beforehand. But it's like, if you start to get into bringing too many things in there, it kind of gets to be what Tony says, is that it starts to take up a lot of your time in between things. You start to say, you know, in this campaign, I want to do this, this, and this. Even with Lord of the Rings, like, it was like, well, I want to do the narrative side quests, right? And then I want to have this, and I want to have this. And I started to have to pare back and be like, well, what's important? What's going to do the most for what this is? Because at a point, as much as cool as it is, only so much makes it to the table and only so much works. So I think it's good to have a good, solid idea. And there was good ideas, but remember that you only have 4 hours there or something like that. And a lot of times things are going to take that up. So it's pick your battles. I think it's find a couple ideas per thing. If you want to play test, do that kind of stuff in one shots or something like that. But it's, you know, find a nice set of ideas to work from. Like, I want to try these two things out this session or this campaign or something like that and see what it feels like.
I think with the Dragonlance thing, I think there was, I'm looking at it differently because it's not so much all these ideas I had in terms of like the plot and stuff or like, you know, certain encounters or creatures or things of that nature. It was really more about I did all of the things that up to that point I wanted to do style wise, like how I wanted to run the game, how I wanted to be a DM for it, to in essence be the DM that I would love to play at the table of, right? So to do the things that as a player I really like to do. So I think that's less about like plot ideas and things like that and more about, Chris, like you were saying, like with like the narrative side quests and doing...
It made me think of something. It's like Rick Rubin, the guy who did like the Beastie Boys and everything. He said something, and it's funny too, because sometimes he just talks pompous because he doesn't play an instrument or whatever. But he said, he's like, do the song that you want to do and people will like it. Don't do the song that you think that people want to do. That's not art. Art is, this is what I'm doing. And because my heart and my soul is in it, this is going to work. So I think the same thing works with ideas, right? Is like, if it's good, take it out there and do it. It's part of that, right? Like, but it's, you have to like, you know, you have to take it out there. So
no, that's an excellent point. And no, I think regardless of if he plays an instrument, he's produced, I don't even know how many
like some ridiculous
records,
amount of things. So
he's created careers.
Vision. And so he's like, that's his vision. And it turns out that that is commercially viable. Yeah. Or in our case, that is something that's enjoyable around the table. So sometimes it's having the confidence and the trust in your ideas.
Yeah. Go with the style that you would want to see and you'll have success because the thing also have a really great plan. Players that's good at that. But the second thing with that is that when you start to have, I think one of the biggest metrics that I would ever have and that I've used in both the Curse of Strahd, in Dragonlance, all of that, is less in the Pathfinder campaign because that was me just ramming this story down all of your throats. But going forward, I would say the biggest metric first and foremost is make all of your choices, plot things like that, player-centric first. So if they're coming to you and saying, oh, man, I would really – when Tony came and said, I would really like Hawk to, like, to take these two swords, I have this idea, and he could, like, meld them, like, I'm going to go with that before anything of my plot ideas because that's something that is going to invest the table, you know, with Tony. So I would say player-centric first always as a metric.
You're a good guy, Dave. I gotta tell you, not a lot of DMs would do that. Like, I want to do something, and you're like,
"Well, we
want
to,
yes,
you wanted to make the Sword of Power, man. I mean, like, we all grew up in the '80s watching He-Man. Like, you kind of have to do that, you know."
And I'm glad you thought so because that led to some good stuff. Without it really being too specifically on the face of a metric, but something I've learned because I am the master of the overcomplicated plot, and if you want this to stick, you've got to be able to There's no argument here. You got to be able to bring this in so you can describe this concisely in a couple of sentences. Ideas, plots, concepts, because if you have something that does make sense, but you need a whiteboard and you show it to them, they're like, I got it. And then you're playing in 3 weeks, they probably don't have it anymore. And then you're like, well, what do you mean?
Even with my intricate note taking, I'm sometimes like, I'm not, what are we doing? Where are we going?
No, but I think that's it. Like, to your point, I think that's a good thing. It's write it down, right? It's kind of like the idea of like, it's like the tattoo thing, like that people always tell you. It's like, get a picture of whatever you want, put it on your mirror and look at it for a little while. And if it still looks good in 3 months or 4 months or whatever, then go ahead with it. It's probably good, but there's going to be other stuff in there that you're going to look at and you're going to think, you know, about it for a little bit and be like, this isn't really doable. Or something that the player's asking, you're like, I can do some of this, but some of this is going to break the campaign. Like, some of this is going to change something like this or something like that. So you kind of, you can give you some time to like, thing is like, I think, but it's good to have a good collection of that. I think ideas are good. It's just, they need to have a place that they sit. And then you can kind of, as you look at them and you think about them, then all of a sudden they start to become viable as you start to put some context around how I would do this idea, how I would do something like the Sword of Power. Right. Like, you had to provide some level of, like, when he says that to you, there is all of a sudden, well, how do I do this exactly? What are the mechanics? What is the sword like? Right. What are the quests that are going to be involved? What are the different things? How, you know, how am I going to fit this into the plot with the other players and stuff like that? And it's the kind of thing where you first, you know, you get the note from Tony and you're like, OK, Sword of Power. And then that night, and a little bit later, you start to think about it, and then you're like, you know what, I really could do this, and you start to put it in there, and you start to put the stats in, and then all of a sudden, it turns into something big. There's other things that you do, and you start to, and you're like, ah, to kind of make also to Tony's point, like plot things, where you're like, and then they're going to find this, and then this guy's going to betray them, and then you start looking at it like a day later, and you're like, dude, this is so railroaded or bad, this is not going to work, right? It was, at the time, it seemed like the idea, like I was ready to text this out to everybody, this was going to be it, and then you look at it a day later, and it's good. So I think, like, to a good point is to have a notebook, I would say, of ideas, have a place where you're storing all these ideas, but let them sit there for a little bit, let them season and see if they still look good a little bit later. See if you can turn them into something that actually you could use at the table.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it too, which goes into another section of Jason's question. I didn't read it out because it wasn't, you know, specifically germane to it, but his ongoing campaign that we've talked about a couple times, where they were ocean going and then they were kind of in the land, he was going to have them do. But they have decided, to his point, to what he tells us, that they surprisingly decided to stay on the ship and just kind of go that instead of going land-based. So, like, that's a perfect example of them and the campaign that's being collaboratively built now is going to tell you what plots are going to be good. Because, like, if I'm reading a book series, I always bring it up, but it's a perfect example because it's one that makes you go, oh my God, I want to run this world. But Sanderson's The Stormlight Archives, right? When I'm reading that book, I'm like, I'm starting to envision, wow, I could run a whole campaign in this world. This would be awesome. But what I'm not going to do is use any of those ideas in my ocean going campaign. Right. I'm going to pull from things that are much more ocean based, and I'm not necessarily going to try to just ram in these other cool ideas I have that are much more land based and just be like, what? But now they're aquatic. Right. So the story itself that's starting to get built is going to tell you what plot ideas or what cool things you want to do fit better. When Tony came with Hawk with the Sword of Power, where it came from was that you guys had gotten Lament the Impaler from Strahd, his sword that I had built, which you can go and read up on the true CR20 Strahd, which is still like getting crazy down. Like, people are hitting that thing like what? Which, like, keep doing it, guys. But like, it was like this dark sword that like drank souls. And then, Tony, we also had another magical sword, right?
We had the sword from the leader of the Silver Dragon.
That's right.
It's a cult, right. That organization. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. The one. Yep.
That was essentially a good sword. you know, at least the way that was presented.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was the whole issue of, could we make these into one sword, or it became balanced to draw on the power of opposites?
Yeah. So that was a perfect example of the campaign kind of put things in the player's path where players said, "Ooh, I really love to do this." Now, one of the things that worked in the Strahd campaign, which was helpful, was that while I had six players, three of the players were actively saying, "I want this. I want to do this," you know, where the other half were cool with kind of going along with the party and adventuring and having fun during the session. But like Scar was specifically looking for some things. Hawk with Tony's character was specifically starting to look for things. Thorin was had this the whole idea of the gentleman, you know, right? And the Glenn Boggle and all of that within the Fey realm that we could push towards as well. So I didn't have to like just say, okay, well, all of the players want to do all of these things and how do I fit them in? And I mean, not always, but generally speaking, you're not going to have everyone being like, I would really love to do something like this. You know, that's going to fit in the campaign.
Well, and I think that was, and I think that's a good example too, where it's, especially with stuff like that, play very player-centric ideas, be, you have to be judicious in how you place them, is that we had to keep Tony's arc inside of the overall arc somewhat short, because you don't want to have multiple sessions where we're all like questing to get Tony's sword reforged or something like that. Like it's a cool, it's a cool side quest, but the, you need to find a way to make them fit in a way that's easy and is comfortable with the whole table. So it's because that, you know, that was one of the things that was I was enjoying the whole thing. I was like, I was invested in, at that point, I was already like a paladin. I was a knight. Like I mean, it felt like my story quest was going well. So I was happy to do other things, but it was, you know, it's one of the things that you have to keep cognizant of.
And one of the, one of the things too, Chris, with that is that, which we talked about many times on the cast, how like we had to create enough of a quest for something like where you're literally creating some artifact that's never occurred
like,
in the
sort
world.
Of power, you can't just like find it. Like, whoops, right, it was like, just here underneath the desk.
So you have to balance like play frequency. So like once a month or so. And we have to now break this out over two or three things. So I had to kind of make it so it wasn't just like, here's the Tony show. But also not everything has to be an active, not every plot idea has to be an active thing within the game. And that's where I had been doing a good amount of it with Scar, where we had a kind of a narrative side quest thing going between us, where you were finding, like, in essence, the Riddle of Steel. You were finding the columns of Torag's Law and the Forge and all of this kind of stuff. But that was really narrative flavored, you know, and that was completely like your character ate that up. It didn't need to be, here's all these mechanical advantages with it, right? So that was an easy thing that I could still do that narratively, and I didn't have to then also be like, okay, how do I fit this into encounters and an encounter building and the actual play time, you know? And again, something that we did a ton of in Dragonlance.
So I'll come back to a little off topic, but still within the realm, where he's had this type of this break time, and you know, I was talking about how that gives him a good recharge, and that's fantastic. And you're introducing all these ideas, which is equally fantastic, and you're trying to like really gauge how much of that you're going to put out for everybody. But going forward through your campaign, when you pick back up to your normal speed of frequency, you're going to have especially comprehensive recaps. So everybody's, you know, as Thorne would say, you tell them again, you tell them what you told them. So that way, four games later, they're not like, oh, wait, we could start doing this now. Oh, I had points to spend with this. Oh, I didn't realize I could buy this at that town. All of that stuff. You don't want anybody to miss out because it got lost in, you know, the sands of time between the sessions.
Yeah. I think it's good. Like ideas are a bit like lore, right? Like there is a tolerance to the level that people at a table that are showing up once a month or once a week or something are going to have towards remembering what they've had, or this difference in the way that the story was versus the way, you know, that's because we've modified it slightly and stuff like that. So I think that's a good point there. is that it's keep the same ideas as you would with the kind of lore, is that you want to, if you're going to introduce something like a plot point or something like that, help to reinforce it so the players know the next time that we're searching for the Sword of Power and this and that and stuff like that. Because especially if they're not directly involved with it, right? In that case, right, the rest of the table, giving them the recap so they feel like, okay, now I'm into this again. I understand what's going on. Obviously, Tony's like, he's been waiting for the... He's been waiting for the game, right? So he's like, ah, we're going to Forge it this week, right? So like, you know, everyone else, they're like, oh, I don't know. They've been busy and stuff like that. So I think that's good to think of it that way.
I mean, and so two things. First, I think one of the good ways to do it is that, like, with something like that, the party kind of got this sense that, and not even that I put out there, but it was just kind of amongst conversations with all of you, that you were starting to, you had destroyed Strahd, freed Barovia, but you knew that you were going forward into this next level with this otherworldly entity of Vampyr and all of this. So, like, you know, gathering this incredible relic that's creating this thing was in a way that the party was like, this is something that, like, we're going to be able to actually punch upwards with this guy now, you know? So it became, like, in a way, like, it became a little less spotlight because it was helping the party, too, even though it was obviously part of Tony's idea for his character.
It pulled the spotlight off of my son's sword. That burned the envy bright at the table there for, like, I picked that up at like third level or something, like, oh wait, here, there's something on the side of the road. I was just a lightsaber.
Oh, don't worry, it's your father's lightsaber. I kept it for you after the Clone Wars. But I think, Chris, this is a great callback to your article from last week, which was phenomenal. Whispers of the Party, delivering lore through the players, because I urge everybody listening right now, go back and read that one, because it is an excellent breakdown of the ways in which you give the agency to the players, and they will do all of the lifting for you, because now it's like this thing that I need to get this out here. I mean, this is something really important. How can I put this into the conversation over the campfire, whatever? But in the same way with plot ideas or character things, is get it through the players, give it to the players, and not even necessarily the player that it's like, let's say, quote unquote, for, give it to one of the other players. I mean, I was doing that in Dragonlance constantly. I was giving clues to other people's stories to other players, so that when you guys would start talking, hey, by the way, this, that, the other, wait a second, what are you talking about? What whisper? Who? Whatever, you know.
And that can work fantastic. And of course, that also depends on the table you're on. Now, Thorne made many complaints about how he dropped lore with certain characters, and that's where it died. He's like, well, if so-and-so had just told you. And I'm like, wow, we really missed out. That sucks. But, you know, that just, you're risking that with that style. Sometimes people take that and it comes out very organically.
Really quick, Tony, the easiest way to not have anyone do that, here's the secret. Don't have the secret be literally the fulcrum upon which the world turns. And then don't give it to your shyest player, right? Throw out this lore and clues that you can feed elsewhere, right? Don't throw it directly into the maelstrom, you know?
Yeah, they've got two sessions to reveal that, and it's coming up some other way. This new plot point or idea or concept that you want to put forth, is this integral to the actual plot, or as Chris, as you were talking about, is this something one of the players is going to take hold of and run with? Is somebody else going to help you with this lifting? Are they going to discuss it? Are they going to bring this conversation? Are they going to catch this when a sign isn't like as obvious as a spotlight, but use it in a way that feels story-esque to enhance the plot and the session, where they're revealing what you kind of put down there? And you're not always like, oh, let me reintroduce a lore drop here. And then the game becomes much more heavily narrative and makes your players really, you know, you wish they were all taking notes and had recordings and everything to capture it all.
Stuff like email and text in between can help with reinforcing those ideas and stuff and getting them out to the people and stuff like that. Dropping certain things, having things that are kind of like, even now in the Lord of the Rings campaign, Dave, you have a sword, right? There's going to be some other things. There's other people that have some sort of things that have their own plots to it that may or may not lead into the story, but it's something that you bring to it. And then as you give them to it, like, obviously you come to the thing and you talk about it around the campfire. Sometimes you'll mention it and stuff like that. And it causes interest amongst the party there. So I think it's good. And I think it's like with all of them, like, it's, if you look at it and you believe in it enough that you could get to the table with it, then run with it. Like, it's like, I think those are the good ideas, but, you know, get some, if it's lore, get it out to somebody else to help you. If it's an idea around, I'd like to try this with a mechanic, take some time and look at it. Take a look and think about what it would do to your to the world. Like, think about it more, not from like, oh wow, this is cool. Like, let the endorphins fall off when it's a request like that, and take the time to think about how you'd fit it into your world. Kind of like how you did with the Sword of Power. I kind of keep coming back to that, but it's like, right, like you had to come back from He-Man, right? And then you had to be like, I have to put this in the hands of a player at a table, right? It can't be a plus, you know, 17 sword that slays dragons with one hit, right? Like, it has to have some level of thing inside of this that I'm providing him the power to go against this, but yet it doesn't change the fabric of the universe when he forges this, right? It's still, the campaign still goes on as normal, right? He just is now empowered with this new sort of power that's really awesome. So I think that's, you know, that's the best way that they work.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely went back and forth massaging some of what he was hoping it would do, and some of what I said, well, it can maybe grow into that. Let's see. The 30 strength was one of the ones that really got me. Even though he made the good point, he was like, what does an additional +3 on top of my strength do really that much? And that's fair. That's fair. You know,
that was a 20th level power.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, tell you the truth, the hitting and the damage output is actually less concerning than like the way in which this is a total tangent, but the way in which 5E handles lifting and pressing strength and how they use like the multipliers. So like, for instance, like, just, it makes me think like somebody with a 30 strength, like a human sized person with a 30 strength is literally like Superman, because Thorin's bugbear samurai, it, what was his name, Tony, in the Storm King's Thunder? I cannot even remember.
Oh God, you're putting me on the spot with this.
Damn it.
Here.
Yeah.
Start with like a Z, like, or something like that.
Zagfay.
Yeah, his bugbear samurai was awesome. But like, we are we're third level. We started third level, right? We started at third level, I think. However we did it. But the orcs were attacking, and he literally was just able to lift these like 1,500-pound boulders and place them in front of the area and literally block out what was happening, because the multiplier on his, you know, 18, 20 strength, whatever, was so ludicrous for the lifting capacity, you know?
You can really go off on a tangent on that, because he, for lifting, was a size class greater than himself. You could do all kinds of stuff where you could stack boons and things from Theros, and this guy, there's one article that I read where eventually at the end he could have lifted like 30,000 pounds, and I'm like, wow. I'm glad nobody did that in my game. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I massaged some of that. But with that said, I think, just like Chris, this goes to part of what you were saying too, is just like one of the biggest metrics should be, always have it be more player centric, but also like take into account, and this goes back to what I said in the very beginning, but world centric too. Like, what makes sense in your campaign, in this world, the way it is running and the way that it's being moved forward, what's the forward momentum on it, and what makes sense for that with your really cool mechanics, right? Like, I have this idea for Like my Star Wars campaign that I've been like kind of percolating with would be a lot of, because it's kind of based off the idea, some of the ideas out of the Firefly board game, it would be kind of gather a crew, travel the universe, get jobs. Like you're a ragtag group that is having to work this ship and run the ship, and there would be like, you'd have to maintain the ship. You could buy upgrades to the ship. You could, and you'd have to do jobs to do this, right? I like this idea. I'm really jazzed about it because I think there's a lot of really cool things you could do with it. It's not something that I would be like, oh, I love this idea. How can I put it in my Dragonlance campaign, right? It makes zero sense in the Dragonlance campaign. It makes perfect sense in the Star Wars campaign. It makes great sense even in like my Melora's Light campaign with the girls are on the ocean. Well, this makes some sense. It could be like Tony's airship in our Storm King's Thunder, where we could, you know, kind of build this ship and maintain it and upgrade it and stuff. But think about what is the campaign and how is that running for your ideas?
Well, along that venue, you know, if you're introducing ideas in terms of mechanics or magic, then if this is a low magic world like Dave loves to run, then maybe that's not the where you want
to run. I like to run worlds where magic matters. Okay.
Yeah, I'm running the lowest magic world now, so I'm about to take that title there. Yeah,
good. Don't tell anybody Lord of the Rings is low magic, Chris. Let me a riot. Don't do it. Like we'll have like an
uprising. When we say low magic, it's access to magic, right? Outside of your character.
That's spell what we
casting.
Have.
Yes, spell casting. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, Hawk didn't get a magic weapon until I think he was level 8 in Curse of Strahd, but I digress. Those were tough times. Uphill both ways.
That's Chris Perkins. Yeah, blame Chris Perkins.
That was some tough stuff. But when you're coming up with these ideas, whether it's magic or it's mechanical or a new ability or something to that effect, the question is, you roll it out and see how that plays. Give that a chance to kick around the world. Is that something that is, as Chris was also talking about, is this kind of rocking the earth itself here? Or does the player feel it's underwhelming? Do they have a fair point there? Like if they came across something that was really cool or unlocking a really cool ability, and you're like, yeah, and I could do that once a day. I feel like the chosen one. You know, so some of those things, if you're still workshopping, you know, in the field testing, as I love to say, with live rounds, then, you know, don't be introducing these in a weekly fashion because you're going to have a lot of fine tuning on your hands.
No, and I think that it's kind of it kind of gets into your prep and stuff like that. Like there's ideas. Like I think the cool thing about Dragonlance, and I think one of the things was that you sort of, that a lot of those ideas were percolating beforehand. Probably not percolating, but so you know what I'm saying? Like these were things that you had been thinking about doing. And so then it was part of the way that you crafted the campaign world, right? And then so then during it, you could turn on and off. But even to the point of the Sword of Power, bringing it back there again, right? We had actually finished the story arc, right? And we were in that sort of like weird period there, right? And like the high levels, but we hadn't hit the final sort of arc there where there was space for it. But otherwise, I think to Tony's point, it's like it's difficult to introduce new ideas constantly like that inside of a campaign. It's like with lore, like you don't want to introduce too much. I want to give you this much. If it's important, I want to stick to it. I got to, you know, thing with, and the same thing with ideas is that it can be disruptive if you're just constantly doing that. And I think people can get confused and stuff like that by that. So it's important and if you have ideas, like a lot of times it's good to stash them, I think is the idea. It's always like, let them season up a little bit. And then when you get that point in the next campaign, you're like, hey, wait, I have this idea in my notebook. This is the perfect time for this now, right? I kind of like your Star Wars thing, right? You were playing Firefly and you're like, I really enjoy this. And then you happen to hit with the Star Wars thing. And then in your head, right, like all of a sudden the idea is seasoned and you're like, hey, this could be a role-playing thing there. Like it wasn't going to be just off the bat the first time you saw it. You know, it took some time for the idea to kind of percolate, and it even is still percolating before you're going to bring it out. Because if you believe in it, you don't want to just fire it off half baked. Like it should have some time, and you should look at it to think about, is it a good idea, right? Like, because I've had plenty of bad ideas, right, that I'm like looking at, and then like a couple days later, I'm like, this is not going to work.
The like, Sword of Death was too great, powerful, dude.
Right? where I gave Matt the stupid sword of death, right? And like after like that one session later, I'm like, this is going to wreck the entire campaign, right? So I had to have an idea myself, like an emergency idea, which wasn't that great. And so I think that's to the point, right, is I had to do a corrective action with like a hurried, rushed idea to get back on track, right? And I think it was still okay. And it sort of, it stayed within the, his character and what the campaign was going, but it still was like, it was like a quick side quest to like give him something else, just not this sword that was like just killing everything that we encountered.
I mean, if that was the benchmark, I was just waiting for my version of that weapon.
Yeah. Read damage and stat blocks, like every time.
A repair that can impale three people in a row.
And all swords dissolve into dust when they fall from powerful people.
All right, so I think it's probably about that time now for some final thoughts on Dr. DM's question, Jason's question about like all these ideas that start percolating up and how do I use them all? Do I use them all? How do I decide which ones are the ones that get the spotlight?
Well, I'd encourage you to use your best material and introduce them in a fashion that's not going to overwhelm the queue of the lore tolerance of your team. You know your table. You know the play frequency. The more you toss out there, you're going to have to reinforce that with recaps. You're going to have to maybe remind people or discuss perhaps at a game like we were talking about via text or maybe in a Google Doc or some emails or whatever, just so everybody holds on to it. And if you throw out a new concept, hopefully it's something where other players can actually help you with in terms of story by discussing with the other players, reminding people, bringing it up. So not every single concept you shoulder the burden of making sure that stays relevant and in the players' hearts and minds.
Pick your battles, right? Like I think all ideas are good, but not all of them are good enough for whatever it is that you're working on at the time. Some of them need some more time. Some of them just may not be doable, right? I think too many ideas, it's too much during a campaign. I think the best time for this is to write them down, to get yourself a place where you're recording at a notebook, a sheet, something like that. And then as you start to have opportunities to look at them and work them into your campaign and stuff like that, that's when they're going to work the best. And if you're just going to try to rush it in over a weekend to try to correct something or someone asked for this, even when Tony asked for it, it still, there was some time there because it took you time. Like it had to take you time to get to the point where you felt comfortable to introduce this and you believed in it enough that it was good for the story, it was good for the player and good for the campaign. And so I think for me, it's like the write it down thing. It's like Rocky, right? Like you put the picture of Drago up there, right? And you're just writing words, right? Like, you know, or a tattoo where it's like, is it a good idea, right? And then finally when it's right, like you grab the picture of Drago down and it's going in a campaign now because just now crumbling. I know that it wasn't stupid. You know, it wasn't me just after a couple beers one night being like, this is the greatest idea I've ever written, right? And then immediately, boom, publish, right? Like it was... It had some space and some air in it, and then all of a sudden it was okay. Maybe it was, and maybe it wasn't. So, write it down.
Just drunkenly releasing information. So, like I said, too, in terms of the Dragonlance campaign, Chris, I think you made a good point that a lot of the things they were ideas that I had been building up to a sense of how I wanted, but it was much more style how I wanted to run the campaign. Necessarily than like ideas in like the mechanics or things like that. Some of it was built out, but yeah. And then I kind of like built it into the campaign. So I think that's a very helpful thing. I go back again to the biggest metric, always do player centric first, you know, what's going to be really exciting for the players to get them more involved, because that's what's going to create the excitement at your table and make these ideas really matter and pop. And I would say if you come across really like some cool mechanic or you develop some new cool homebrew thing, like I'm thinking in the Dragonlance campaign where I introduced the journey system that we had, where we're, you know, pulling cards. Again, something that I developed because it's very similar to Firefly, the board game. It's a way of making travel, making hex curls much more exciting or much more like they matter more. But I introduced that when you guys got into the Northern Wastes, and it had been something that I had been playing with, and I was like, oh, this is a perfect time. But that was also a change in the story. It was a new point. So now, okay, we're out of Caliman, we're out of Vogler. Now we're in this huge open expanse of desert and ruins. Oh, well, now as you guys travel, this is the travel mechanic, right? And now it's introduced so you can better – it's kind of like introducing something for the first time because you can do it at a new point in the story rather than just trying to get it in normal game flow. So hopefully that makes sense. That's going to be it for me, and that's going to be it for us this week. Again, Jason, thank you for the question, as always. And we always love hearing about how the campaign continues to go. But everyone out there, remember, this was Jason's question. And if you're having issues, questions, problems, we are DMs with problems. We like to help you, DMs with problems out there. So send them in to us. You can reach us at 3wisedms.com and put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And you can get us on Facebook and Instagram. We're very active on those sites. Whatever mechanics you do, though, you will probably want to use some dice, however they are, whether you're going to do some new fall damage. Like my, I just happened to post it one day and it just caught controversy immediately. Everyone just said it was stupid. And then some people actually had like some actual like information, you know, like, oh, well, I don't really like that. I think this is good. Oh, that is a good idea. You know, I just like the idea that like for me, it was the way like as you would take fall damage, like the die that you roll would keep going up. And you would just start adding all of those together, like making falling matter again, right?
That would make falling lethal.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
So I'm
falling can't kill you. Yes.
I'm sorry. Like here, but in like Critical Role season one, or the first campaign, the druid decided to jump off a 1,000-foot cliff because they, as she said, well, we're pretty much like gods now. And he, like, ran out the damage, and she was killed, but then immediately resurrected by the cleric. So it was like, well, who the hell cares, you know? But, like, make falling matter again, right? That's all I was saying. But however you want to do your fall damage, though, you know, get some dice over at our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You put in the code 3WISEDMS10, that's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10, you get 10% off your order, which is really nice. But yeah, that's going to be it for us this week. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of 3WISEDMS from home. If you like what you're hearing, please smash that 5-star rating button, leave us a good review, tell your friends. If you'd like to hear us talk about something you're having a problem with, please send it in to 3wisedms@gmail.com or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, put it in the What's Your Problem field, or talk to us on Facebook, Instagram. We're active on all those social networks, and we're always looking for new questions to help DMs with. We often answer listener questions, so if you have anything you'd like to hear us talk about, go ahead and send that in, and we'll do our best to see it makes the air. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time on 3WISEDMS.